Welcome to the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
It's Indiana.
Watford for the win! Yes! Yes! Unbelievable!
Your daily home for complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective.
Welcome to Indiana basketball.
Smart takes the shot! And the Hoosiers with 3 seconds. Go ahead.
Indiana wins the championship. Keith Smart is the hero.
When my time on Earth is gone and my activities here are past, I want they bury me upside down and my critics can kiss my...
Now here's your host, Matt Dennison.
It's Indiana. What I feel is the pinnacle, the absolute pinnacle of all of college basketball.
Hello, welcome in a Monday edition of the Hoosier Report live from the Big X Studios in Jeffersonville. So very glad to have you with us today. Hope you'll join us each and every day this week as we cover IU basketball, IU football, and of course sports from a Southern Indiana perspective and more. Lots to get to. We're coming out of a weekend where there actually was some basketball in the state. Not a lot to report, not a ton of teams playing, many of the top players not out there, but as of Friday, according to Indiana's back on track plan, it's permissible, I guess you could say, to play 5-on-5 basketball. So there were some early AAU tournaments and some games, I know in Indianapolis, in Lafayette, also in Fort Wayne as well. Some of the teams taking advantage of that and actually getting back to it and gearing up for what could be a travel season for basketball that goes into August or September. Normally by the end of July, all of this stuff at all levels, young kids, old kids, college recruitable players, and those just out there trying to get better, it normally wraps up by then. But because of the coronavirus, it looks like we're headed to a much later travel basketball season. Possible that college coaches will be allowed out in August and September if that proposal in the coming days and weeks is approved by the NCAA. So I think we all have to accept, and I think many of us have done this at this point, things in sports, whether it's local with basketball, whether it's national, whether it's worldwide, whatever it is, things are going to look a lot different with our game and with sports as it has now for months since the virus shut things down back in the middle of March. And getting back to play, I think it's going to happen, but it's going to look a lot different, and it's going to take a little time for it to get anywhere to what I think you could consider a new normal, or at least a temporary normal, as we fight this pandemic. Let's jump into the show lineup. It's a service of Honey Baked Ham in New Albany. Here in segment number one, we'll take a look at our Zaxby's headlines, a summary of the day's top IU and Southern Indiana sports news. And we've got a lot to look at. A 2021 player in the state, Indiana not really involved, I do not believe, but committed to a Big Ten school over the weekend. We'll tell you about that. We'll also take a look at the latest with the virus as players return to campus, specifically from a college football perspective. I've got to tell you, and I think anybody that's followed this with some of these numbers, and some schools are telling you, other schools like Indiana, Louisville, Kentucky, there's been no mention of positive or negative test as athletes return for voluntary workouts. But there are some concerning things across the country right now when it comes to the college football season and what the experts are saying and what some of the positive tests, the numbers are looking like. It's some of the really predominant college football programs, and so we'll talk about that. A little note on Vic Oladipo. Coach Knight back at the Hall of Fame, or I should say visits the Hall of Fame. I believe it was his first trip there over the weekend or late last week, and a couple other nuggets we'll get to here in the first segment. Later in the program, we'll be joined by Zach Osterman of the Indianapolis Star on IU basketball and IU football, and then Chad Gilbert, Charlestown AD, IHSA Executive Board member. He joins later in the hour as we talk sports from a local perspective, as we do each Monday. Don't forget, you can send a question or comment to the show. Love to hear from you. Just tweet at Hoosier Hills, all one word, Hoosier Hills, on Twitter. You can send a DM, a tweet, whatever you like to do. We'll use your question or your comment on the air today here in this Monday program. That's the show lineup, a service of Honey Baked Ham in New Albany. Don't forget to check out Honey Baked Ham for their new dinner package deals that are now being offered. Also, you can now dine in. That's open and available, as well as pickup and curbside service still available for you at Honey Baked Ham in New Albany. And, of course, don't forget, 50% off all bone-in hams. That's a tremendous special, and it's still going on now for a limited time at Honey Baked Ham in New Albany. Let's get into our Zaxby's headlines, a summary of the day's top IU and Southern Indiana sports news. Brooks Barnheiser of Lafayette Jeff, he'll be a senior when school resumes. He's had a nice high school career. His dad's the coach now at Lafayette Jeff High School. His dad's been a coach in our state for many years. I believe the family left the state. He took a job maybe in Alabama or somewhere down south for a few years. But Brooks has been a notable Division I prospect that's been recruited by a lot of mid to high major schools. And he committed over the weekend to a Big Ten school. Barnheiser will attend Northwestern, according to a little promotional video that he tweeted out with his decision yesterday. So another in-state guy had some maybe light interest. I think he was kind of always, at least when you think about key players in the 2021 class, once you get through some of the names that we talk about so often on this show, he was probably right there at the top of the list as that next level of a player. If Indiana was going to add another person from in the state or needed someone at his position, he would have been a likely next level person to go to. Purdue some interest as well, I think very similar, but ultimately it's Northwestern for Brooks Barnheiser of Lafayette Jeff. Also, a headline that continues to come up, I feel like there's something that we talk about related to this each and every day in this Zaxby's headline segment, but what school that's actually reporting positive coronavirus test has the number that shocks you the most each day? And last week was a big week for players to return. Because it's been split into phases, especially a big football team where you've got a number of members of the team returning, unlike basketball where it's 13 to 15 players between scholarships and walk-ons and things like that, there's phases. So we could hear more as second and third phases that aren't already there come into some of these schools. But here was the concerning stuff over the weekend. Number one, Clemson had like 28 players in their athletic program test positive. 23 of those were football players, and there was an additional number of people that were quarantined because of contract tracing or because of concerns that they had come obviously in contact with someone that tested positive. LSU reporting yesterday that at least 30 LSU football players are in quarantine. Some have tested positive. Others have been found to have contacted with positive people, and a portion of those players apparently got infected at a nightclub outbreak in Baton Rouge, which I tell you what, I've heard and seen some pictures from some establishments here in the area where they've been packed with some of this great weather, this great early summer weather that we've had, and you wonder about bars and clubs and even outdoor situations where you're just right on top of each other. But LSU reporting 30 players in quarantine, that was over the weekend. Kansas State, they have paused all of their voluntary workouts for football student athletes for 2 weeks, at least 2 weeks, after a number of positive tests. 14 players on Kansas State, within Kansas State's football program, testing positive. So they've actually shelved the voluntary workouts. I think there are a few other schools that have been in that same position that started them, realized they're getting positive tests, and at least for now have shelved them for a couple weeks to see if things clear out with those infected or those potentially suspected to be infected in a quarantine situation. So these are going to be interesting deals. I mean, Kansas State, it's just a voluntary workout, but these are necessary times, as we've talked about, especially for football with the season just around the corner, to get in shape, get your body ready to be hit, body ready for a physical game. Again, imagine that we were in the season right now. Imagine that Kansas State or LSU had 30 players that had got it from some sort of team-connected thing, and all of a sudden LSU can't play a primetime football game with or without fans on national television on Saturday night. That could happen. I think that will happen. Something like that will happen in sports where what we're planning to happen or what's scheduled to happen may not happen when we think it will or at all because of something like this or an outbreak. I think we would be in denial if we didn't think that that was a real possibility to happen. So interesting stuff. We'll continue to track college football programs as they return. And for those of you that have tweeted, messaged, asked me, again, from what I know, Indiana not releasing any data related to positive tests, related to anything to do with COVID-19. I do not believe Louisville has released anything. I do know Coach Satterfield, the football coach at UofL, made a comment in a press conference last week that I think, paraphrasing here, but things were generally good with that, which makes you think they've had none or very few. And I don't believe Kentucky has put anything out as well, and I can't answer for Purdue. I'm not sure that I've seen them say anything or not as players begin to return to campus for voluntary workouts. Next headline I want to cover, this is a big one that's going to affect college basketball. And again, I'm not really surprised because I don't think it's worth being surprised right now in sports. We just don't know exactly what's going to happen. But we thought we knew basically where things were headed with college basketball for next year, who coming back, who's not coming back, who's keeping their name in the draft until we knew it was going to be sometime in early August with this new to-be-announced NBA draft date coming out. But we had an idea of what college rosters could look like, but we've been very open in saying we don't think it's going to affect Indiana. Justin Smith has transferred. He was the only one that had declared for the draft. But it would affect the Big Ten, depending on what players decide at this new late deadline. Well, now we know exactly what the deadline's going to be because over the weekend, the NBA draft was set for October 16th, according to ESPN, with an early entry deadline of August 17th. So we thought it would be in early August. August 17th is in mid-August. So what this means is that college and international players that maybe previously had said, hey, we're not going to enter the 2020 draft, now they can reconsider that and have until August 17th to check out those decisions and make a final decision on whether they are in or out or exactly what they're going to do. So for college hoops and for the Big Ten Conference, it really just delays things a couple more weeks. I don't think there's any real effect on Indiana here with its own roster or team, at least not this year. And, of course, most of this is just being – the unknown is being caused by the delay, which, of course, is being forced by the coronavirus and all the unknown about things right now. But it's just going to delay what we know really about the Big Ten Conference as we think about Indiana and who they're going to have to play against and what some of these top elite players in the league are going to do. Are they going to come back or will they keep their name in? We'll know on August 17th. I think that's the next date you'll really be able – to reset the Big Ten Conference for the upcoming season and figure out what exactly it could look like. Also, some good news, former IU player Victor Oladipo, according to Adrian Wojnarowski of ESPN, he plans to, quote, ramp up activity with the Indiana Pacers starting next week and evaluate his repaired torn quad tendon prior to making a final commitment to playing in the season's restart in Orlando. Again, that's Victor Oladipo. So hope that he's healthy enough. If I'm going to watch a lot of NBA basketball and really follow the Pacers for the rest of the season, love to see Victor Oladipo back out there if he's healthy enough to do that. Pretty cool note, Bob Knight, Hall of Fame in Newcastle. He and Bob Hamill, the former sports writer at the Bloomington Herald Times, took kind of a spur-of-the-moment trip to the Hall of Fame museum in Newcastle over the weekend. Chris May, my good buddy that we have our podcast together interviewing high school coaches across the state, he called over the weekend, said, I got a great story. Coach Knight came. It was awesome. Got to spend some time with him and Coach Knight taking a look around the museum. Lots of pictures out there of him looking, even at some exhibits that include Indiana memorabilia and some of his former players. So really cool to see Coach Knight not just return to Indiana to a game, but to go out and keep himself busy and go to some basketball-related stops around the state. And the Hall of Fame's closed right now to the public because of the virus, but you make way for a Hall of Famer like Bob Knight if he wants to come in, and pretty cool to see him do that over the weekend. One other note here in our headlines segment, this is a football note. Nick Sheridan, IU's 32-year-old offensive coordinator. This is amazing. He's going to make $450,000 per year as his base salary, and that's per the contract that was obtained by Mike Miller through an open records request. He had been making about $190,000 as IU's tight end coach. This is his first time having an offensive coordinator position. That is quite a pay raise for a young 32-year-old coach who, of course, has big shoes to fill with that position open after the previous holder left to take his own Division I head coaching job. But it tells you to me, and I don't know college football salaries, especially when it comes to assistant coaches, but when I hear the offensive coordinator, 32-year-old first-timer in that position, making $450,000 a year in this time of some tight finances with what we know this virus is going to affect, it tells me that Indiana is pretty serious about its football program and getting things in the right direction under Coach Allen. So quite a salary for the offensive line, of offensive coordinator coach Nick Sheridan for Indiana. That's a look at our Zaxby's headlines for this Monday edition of the program. Don't forget, if you can't be with us live, check out the podcast. We're on Apple Podcasts. We're on SoundCloud as well. All you got to do is search the Hoosier Report, and you can find each and every edition of our program to listen to at your convenience. We'll head to a commercial break. We're back with Zach Osterman of the Indianapolis Star. We'll talk IU basketball and football next. This is the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
We're back on the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison. Join Matt daily at 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. for complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective.
I'll handle this the way I want to handle it now that I'm here. You f***ed it up to begin with. Now just sit there or leave. I don't give a f*** what you do. Now, back to the game.
Here's Matt Dennison.
And we're back on this Monday program. Zach Osterman of the Indianapolis Star is our guest. He joins us on Mondays as we talk all things IU basketball and football as well. And Zach, I want to start the chat today, our interview, with a story that you recently penned, and it's very interesting. You've been going back telling some recruiting tales of IU basketball, and your recent piece is about Colin Hartman. And it talks about why he picked Indiana over Purdue. And I don't want you to give the story away, but tell us more about it, because he very much considered Purdue. And, of course, you can find this story if you're a subscriber at IndyStar.com/sports.
Yes, the impetus behind the series is both a little bit of a kind of reverse course on the where are they now sort of story, more talking, you know, with people, you know, IU basketball alums about their memories, and kind of concurrently to give, you know, people a bit of a passive idea of how recruiting has changed down the years. What's different? What's the same? You know, what rules have changed? You know, it's interesting. I think the next one I'm going to do is probably Pat Graham, who obviously played for that Bloomington Red AAU team. And I think his generation was kind of the first one that really grew up in, like, with AAU basketball as a thing. And it's also just interesting, you know, to talk to everyone from Steve Green, who doesn't commit until the end of his senior season, to Colin Hartman, who obviously commits before the start or right at the start of his sophomore season. Not wanting to give too much of it away, he's admitted to me, and well, I would say admitted, I don't think it's some sort of secret, but he told me, and I think he's told other people the story down the years, that you know, for him it was kind of IU or Purdue, and he almost committed to Purdue, and his mother kind of said, let's take a breath, let's not, you know, make rash judgments. Of course, the funny part is then he says, hey, I think I might want to commit to IU, and she turns the car around in Martinsville and brings him back down to commit. But it's just been, you know, it's been interesting, and it's obviously there's not a lot going on with sports. I don't expect college, you know, we've been getting to talk to some football players and things over the last few weeks and months and coaches. I would expect actually that as college sports activity ramps up, at least at IU, that will die down a little bit because everybody will be so focused on trying to do this safely and trying to be smart and trying to be careful. And so I think you actually may see kind of less sort of media access in the next few weeks. And so here's an opportunity to maybe tell some old stories that people enjoy reading.
Yeah, absolutely. Zach, basketball returned in some form this week, according to the Back on Track Indiana plan. I guess it was permissible to play basketball games in the state starting Friday, and some took advantage of that. There were some small tournaments in Indianapolis and Lafayette and in Fort Wayne as well. And, of course, none of this brought out all the top players, and no college coaches were allowed to be out recruiting, at least from the Division I level, like Archie Miller and the IU assistant coaches. But it does signal that basketball in some way is back, and it's going to be interesting to see how basketball goes, how sports at the local level goes, because that could tell us more about, and of course the numbers of the virus, but that all together could tell us more about what the possibility of a true recruiting period, whether it be in August or September, if it ultimately is approved by the NCAA, that could tell us more, though, if that's going to be a possibility, not just needing the NCAA's approval still, but from a health perspective and from a does this make sense to do perspective.
You know, I would even go a step further. I think that, you know, some of this, not necessarily all of it, but I wouldn't be surprised if some of what we're seeing sports go through now turns into a bit of a dress rehearsal or a shakedown cruise for the return of school and what that looks like, how much in-person instruction is realistic, how much testing is needed, how strictly enforced things like mask wearing are going to have to be. And that's, you know, that's frankly at all levels. You know, I mean, like my son's daycare is hopeful, let's say, that anyone over 2 will wear a mask at all times. It's hard to get my son to wear pants. So, you know, obviously masks are a whole separate thing, but, you know, it just, not that sports is an intentional guinea pig in all this, but I think there are going to be some things that as we go through and we say, well, if you can't make this work for, you know, something, a community as potentially insular as a basketball team, or if we're, you know, if we're struggling to make X, Y, or Z work for a football program that's got a team doctor and a staff of trainers and, you know, all the resources to consistently be sanitizing and washing and, you know, protecting and just doing everything, you know, kind of as by the book as possible, well, then that may not work for, you know, let's say college in this example in general. You know, it really is, I've used this phrase before, I'm not sure with you, but when we talked to Andy Hipskind, IU's chief medical officer for the athletics department a couple weeks ago about the restart plan, he said that this is like coaching a brand new sport, that there's no playbook, there's no film to go back and review, there's nothing from the past that you can use as a blueprint to lay on, you know, you lay your plan on top of. You really are, to kind of mix my metaphors, building the airplane while you're flying it. And that doesn't mean we're not going to find solutions. It doesn't mean we're not going to figure out ways around certain issues. But it means that there are, you know, we're going to have to learn very aggressively kind of as we go here. We don't really have another choice. And I think we are going to find that a lot of what we learn from these processes is probably pretty consistent with what public health officials are telling us. Mask wearing is essential. Washing hands diligently is essential. Doing everything you can to socially distance is essential. And that if we do those things, we can cut dramatically down on this. I mean, this is not a perfect comparison, but I have some good friends that live in Hong Kong, and you know, I believe Hong Kong was basically the center of the SARS outbreak in, what was that, 2003 or 2004. And so there was always already kind of this culture of being very publicly or very aware of public health concerns, not necessarily that you were wearing a mask everywhere already, but very aware of public health concerns. And, you know, obviously Hong Kong's got its own political problems right now, but they say that coronavirus, because everyone wears a mask, because everyone is very careful to be safe and to be diligent and to sterilize and to wash hands and all those things, and because it's possible to socially distance where you can, coronavirus is not something that people have to live with on a day-to-day basis there. But it's because everyone is sort of collectively together in the communal approach to attacking this thing with preventative measures. And I think that sports, particularly high school and college sports, where you can't build that bubble, are going to tell us that is very much the case for schools as well.
Very interesting. And along these lines, I don't think we talk with you the day or the week that this came out, so I'm curious your thoughts. But while we don't know what college football is going to look like, and college sports, college basketball, everything as a whole, we do know that college campuses are going to look a lot different as far as the format, the times that athletes and students are on campus, and the breaks are going to be different. I just saw a story before we came on the air earlier that I believe it was the University of Michigan going to a calendar that I believe is similar to Indiana, where there's no fall break, and they're basically on a pause between, from classes at least, from Thanksgiving until the end of the semester. They'll be doing those classes remotely, and then not starting the winter semester in January until after a certain date as well. They'll start those classes remotely, which gives a long pause of in-person instruction. Now, it's going to be interesting to see what the campus looks like for athletes who are left behind to play games, if games are still going as we hope that they are, basketball and others in the winter. So the campus could look considerably different, both for students and for those that are student-athletes as well.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think it will. I mean, Indiana's obviously, using Indiana as an example, that they're also giving, they're offering basically a hybrid of online and in-person instruction. I don't think they have outlined publicly anyway, you know, what that division will be, but I would not be surprised if there are students at Indiana, the vast majority of their learning is online only. You know, I mean, I think back, for example, to my freshman year when I was taking a lot of sort of general education type classes, and I was sitting in a lot of big lecture halls, and my classes had 100, 200 people in them. That's obviously, it just can't happen according to social distancing guidelines. And I think those are very much the sorts of classes that you will see moved online. You know, you bring up breaks. I mean, I think it is fascinating, and it will be eventually a question worth asking: how do basketball players, wrestlers, swimmers, anyone who would be in the thick of their competitive season from Thanksgiving until Valentine's Day, are they affected at all by the fact that none of their peers are on campus? Again, I will bang this drum endlessly. How much of this raises legally viable arguments against amateurism if you're asking athletes to behave differently than the rest of your student body? And then I think you're right. I tweeted this earlier. I think you're right to bring up breaks. I think there was an early perception that schools were cutting off fall and spring breaks. And I mean, Indiana's fall break is just a Friday. But I think in fairness, a lot of students have done what students do, which is decide that if the fall break started on the Friday, then it really started on the Thursday, and they took a full long weekend. You know, I think if people assumed they were eliminating these breaks so that they would be able to save time, I think they're eliminating these breaks so that their student populations don't have reasons to travel en masse. And certainly not to travel en masse somewhere else and then come back within the 2-week window that we know, you know, can sort of exist between when you are infected with coronavirus or COVID-19, we should say, and when you begin to show symptoms. It can be up to 2 weeks. You can obviously also remain asymptomatic, but it can be up to 2 weeks between when you're infected and when you show symptoms, if you do show symptoms. And so I think that when you talk about these breaks being eliminated, I think that's largely to keep kids off, keep kids from leaving campus en masse and then very quickly returning again. I think we're finally hitting the part of this year where if things go as we hope and according to plan, we can look ahead and say by this time next year, a lot of this hopefully will be irrelevant. There will be a vaccine. We will be out and about together in the community again. But that also gives you a sense of the scope of what it's going to take to navigate these next 10 to 12 months as safely as possible, to let people get back to some sort of normal and not be creating, obviously, a pretty big public health crisis.
Zach Osterman, the Indianapolis Star, my guest. Zach, before we let you go, I do want to talk some IU football for a moment. And I mentioned in our headlines segment today a considerable, no question about it, but I mentioned a considerable increase in some of the assistant coaches' salaries, specifically the offensive coordinator, a big jump in his pay from his previous job last season, but some big raises based on a good year last season despite some health concerns, and you hear about athletic departments being affected financially. That's a real story. That's happening, but it didn't keep the IU assistants from getting some very nice raises in many cases.
Yeah, and it's worth, as you say this, I'm literally sitting in front of the chart that I'd written out to write that story. It's worth pointing out these contracts were all signed, you know, back in the winter before we knew the scope of what we would be dealing with coronavirus, with COVID-19. So it's not like Indiana looked at these contracts and said, we know this massive financial crisis is coming, but we don't care. We're still going to spend a bunch of money on football. It's also worth pointing out that they're actually spending right around what they were a season ago on assistant coaches' salaries. Plus, if you throw in Aaron Wellman, Indiana's new head strength coach, because one of the stipulations of Tom Allen's new contract was that the strength coach would get a fully vested guaranteed contract in the same way that assistant coaches do, which obviously just makes the position more appealing because there's more job security and better compensation. But because Wellman is making only $75,000 less, but less than what David Ballou and Matt Ray were making, and because Indiana had been paying Kalen DeBoer so much, paid him $800,000 last season in base compensation, those numbers attenuate down a little bit. Now, you're still able to give a number of people raises. Nick Sheridan, you mentioned, gets a big raise moving from tight ends coach to offensive coordinator, over $250,000 in terms of raise. Casey Teagarden gets a bump moving to special teams. Kane Womack gets a small bump. Grant Hurd gets a $75,000 raise. Mike Hart gets a $50,000 raise. You know, I think the other part of this, too, is when you couple the fact that Indiana didn't actually, in terms of total numbers, balloon its assistant coach spending too much from last year to this year, really at all, with the fact that Tom Allen was also granted an extra $500,000 into his assistant coach hiring pool by his new contract, which he, of course, signed last offseason, or I guess we're still in the offseason. What you also recognize is that there's a fair bit of wiggle room here. Let's say Indiana has a really good, really, really good season offensively. Nick Sheridan turns out to be a great offensive coordinator. Indiana's got the room to give him a raise and make it appealing for him to stay, and that goes for a lot of these guys. And of course, we don't know how some of that may be affected if Indiana has to start making has to start sort of pruning the bushes financially because of COVID-19. But at very least, this is just an acknowledgement that Indiana is, you know, sort of redoubling its investment in football as it kind of consistently has. It's rarely under Fred Glass, and now as we move into Scott Dolson's tenure, been about going from spending $1 million a year on the coach to $5 million a year on the coach, or, you know, $1.5 million on assistants to $5 million on assistants. It's been just steady, progressive upward movement, recognizing trends in median salaries, expectations of certain positions in wider college football, and being able to come closer to matching that than, you know, you would have years ago. I mean, just using Aaron Wellman as an example, he's set to make $700,000 in base compensation next year. I think I'd have to go back and look at Bill Lynch's salary, but I'm not sure Bill Lynch was making $700,000 the year, his first year as a full-time head coach, because obviously it was interim the year they went to the bowl game, and then he was made full-time head coach the year after that. I'm not sure he was making $700,000 as head coach in base compensation, and that's only 12 years ago. So, you know, it's not something that's ever happened overnight for Indiana. It's just been a steady sort of upward trend, and I think this continues that.
Zach Osterman, the Indianapolis Star. Zach's always with us on Mondays as we open the show. Zach, thank you for the chat today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, as always.
Definitely. Zach Osterman, the Indianapolis Star. You can read his work at indystar.com/sports. And one other note I wanted to pass along, Floyd Central, gearing up for what should be a big football season if we get there in the fall, had another player commit to play Division I college football over the weekend. Winkers Wright of Floyd Central, he committed to Illinois State and will head there after his senior year at the Floyd Central program. Could be a big year for Highlander football. More on that coming up later in the week. All right, we'll head to a commercial break. We'll come back with our final segment of the day. Chad Gilbert, former coach, Charlestown AD, and also an IHSA executive board member. He joins me next as we talk local sports here on the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
We're back on the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
Let's win this one for all the small schools who never had a chance to get here.
Join Matt daily at 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. for complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective.
Let's win for Coach. You got us here.
Here's Matt Dennison.
Chad Gilbert, former coach in the area, currently the athletic director at Charlestown High School. He's also on the IHSA executive board representing this area, joins us Mondays as we talk local sports here on the show. Chad, a couple weeks ago, we saw the return of what you call ring season with the youth baseball tournaments getting back underway after obviously a big break, a late start because of the coronavirus pandemic. And this past weekend, we begin to see, in a slow way, the return of basketball, at least with travel teams. High school teams, I don't think many are going to take advantage of the ability to play games in July. At least it doesn't sound that way. Most will just be doing workouts, and many schools have placed requirements on their athletes and coaches to pretty much keep it close to home, keep it close to their school for this year because of all the situations out there with health right now. But we are, at least locally, Chad, seeing some early signs of a return to play.
Well, Matt, you know, rings, first off, Amy likes when you call me president of the IHSA executive board.
I need to add that to my script, you know. And again, Amy, we just need to have Amy on. She can just get us all set and squared away.
She makes notes, and she counts how many O's and ums I say during the conversation, too. So she coaches me up after this. But, you know, ring season, there was a slight delay in ring season because Father's Day yesterday. Look for a spike in rings coming up this weekend. I would think ring season, the sequel, will be this coming weekend. Probably settle down after that for the 4th of July, then we'll have the prequel, the whatever they call it, the trifecta. Third ring season will come after that. But no, Matt, it is it's time that we're hoping can get back to normal. You know, you've seen some football teams, some baseball teams that some outbreaks have occurred. And, you know, quite frankly, they've sent players home. The next month's going to tell the tale one way or another. We're going to see where we're at a month from now. Hopefully we're in a spot that we can have fall sports. We can get things underway. College sports are underway. And it'll be underway with interest of keeping our athletes and our spectators safe. So I think that's something we're all looking forward to and something that we all need.
Chad Gilbert is my guest. Are you concerned, Chad, as a high school athletic director, when you see college programs that have the resources and the ability to test and quarantine? And obviously it's different because you're going away in many cases to that school. It's not where you live. It's not in your hometown. But are you concerned when you see, even with those resources, the number of positives that are out there when you think about your teams getting back together in July for workouts, or you think about fall sports ahead?
Oh, absolutely. You know, that's something that when you see people in, down in Florida right now, when you see people shoulder by shoulder on the beach, when you see people in the restaurants, that's one thing I talked to a buddy of mine today. And he said, like, you know, how many of those are in the nursing home? Well, this thing's killed off most of the stuff in the nursing home. It's moved on to people that are your age, Matt Disson, 21s, 22s, 23s, 30-year-olds, you know, who are out and about and not wearing masks and not doing social distancing, where it's you worry that that stuff could be spread back to your teams. One thing our coaches will have to do is they'll have a screening process. They're going to take attendance every day. They'll have to disinfect the balls before practice, disinfect the equipment before and after practice. And we'll have an hour in between each facilities used in order to let the next team come in. So we're hoping that if a case does break out, that we can trace it back and get those people under quarantine so we just don't have a massive breakout throughout the school and throughout our system. And it's we're hoping, you know, knock on wood, we don't have anything. But we want to make sure that we're prepared in case something does happen.
Chad Gilbert, my guest. Chad, this is a topic that we've touched on before, and it's interesting because whether it's college or high school, I can't imagine a rougher time, a more difficult time to come into a job as a new head coach, as a first-year head coach at whatever school, whatever program. I don't care if it's a fall sport, winter sport, spring sport, whatever. You know, there's so much excitement when you get hired, and you're turning a new page in many situations. And you want to capitalize on that. You want to get to know the players. You want to introduce yourself to the parents. You want to make a splash in the community or the school. And so much of that has not been able to happen for new coaches that took jobs in the offseason. And we've talked about this as well. It's not been a real active year for job changes in the offseason. And I've got to believe that coronavirus probably has played a role in that side of things as well. But I guess I'm asking you, can you imagine taking, say, the Jeff girls or boys job? You coached both of those situations previously. Can you imagine taking over one of those jobs this year, not having a real opportunity in the off season to do some of the normal things, not getting the ability to be in your office in the school with the kids as often, maybe not play any competitions in the off season, just a completely different way to take over a program?
You know, Matt, and that's one thing. We'll talk about Jeffersonville, the boys and girls job, and, you know, North Harrison's girls coach is former Cordon boys coach Jamie Kokemeyer. So you've got Missy taking over the girls, you got Jamie taking over the girls at North Harrison, and you've got Andrew taking over the boys. And it's something that when you take those over, that's your time to get some stuff done, right, when you walk into a new program. So take all the factors of the COVID-19 out of it. Just talk about taking over a new program. And that's one thing, you know, that when we went over from the boys' side, or from the girls' side to the boys' side, we took it over July 5th. And, you know, we left something, a state championship with two possible missed basketballs and Lincoln Rowland and Jalen McClain coming back. But we felt like we had an opportunity to do something that hasn't been done. That's to win a state championship on the boys and girls side. And so we had a little bit of excitement. We had a little bit of chance that these coaches aren't having that opportunity now. We went to a team, you know, with lost three starters with Mashmeyer and Tyrone Williams, BJ, who went to Hanover and played. And then Darryl went to Southport. We had a JV team that was 500. We had a booster club that was $5,000 in debt. But what we did is, and this is what I would suggest to all coaches, is we led, we worked hard, we got people involved, and we had to make some tough decisions. And the next two seasons, you know, we were 44-8, undefeated in the Hoosier Hills. We won two sectionals and went to the Final Four. And that's something that is these coaches are going to have to just jump in. Now, make sure that everybody understands the state championship's not going to get won in these 3 weeks. But the relationships, the culture you set, the opportunity to embrace the program. You know, we've got when we left that, we had three starters back, $8,000 in the bank. And, you know, we had excitement, kids coming around. And I think that's all three of those programs have that right now, that they're in good situations. They and, you know, and I'll be honest with you, Matt, to change the subject, you know, I never really wanted to leave Jeffersonville coaching. I applied at Charlestown twice before. And I know I'm getting off subject a little here, but I was upset that my wife didn't get assistant principal job at Jeff at the time. And pride kind of got in my way to get out of there. That being said, I'm happy for the move. I'm excited what I've done down here. And, you know, I'm excited for the success that Jeffersonville has had and will have. But that's one thing that if you think about that, you've got something very special at Jeffersonville. And one thing is that they're both powerhouse programs on the boys and girls side. It is they're going to be able to, you know, sell the program, sell the tradition of the program, the history of the program. You know, if I was those guys, I'd get in the record books and make sure those record books are updated, you know, and reach out to people involved in that program. Get involved with the school, you know, reach out to the student body, reach out to families, be visible at things. I think, you know, you got to get lots of good help, assistant coaches, good feeder programs. We've had all those things. And you got to figure out, well, and I'll use Jeffersonville, for example. Like we talked about, we lost Coach Pooley last weekend ago, or a couple weeks ago. And that's something that a lot of the great ones at Jeffersonville that made Jeffersonville special have passed away, whether it was Pooley or Pat Hennigan, Teddy, Gene Coomer. The list can go on and on. You got to find someone to take those shoes and make Jeffersonville special again. And, you know, and the final thing that, you know, you want to tell those coaches, and those coaches know, is you just got to win. And you got to go out there and do what Jeffersonville does. And, you know, I can say Jamie at North Harrison, the girls program out there, what they've done. You embrace that tradition, sell your kids on that, and success breeds success. When kids see those other kids out there winning, they're going to be part of something special. So I think that's what those coaches have in mind. And all three of those coaches, this isn't their first rodeo. They know what they're doing. And, you know, we all wish them luck, and we want them to do well, because the better Southern Indiana sports are, the more you and I have to talk about.
Absolutely. Chad Gilbert, Charlestown AD, IHSA Executive Board President. I'll have to remember that. Congratulations on that new honor from, I think, a month or so ago. But, Chad, appreciate the chat, and we'll talk with you again next Monday.
Matt, one thing, you know, yesterday Father's Day, lots of great fathers out there. You know, my dad is the best. I'm 48 years old. He continues to coach me up. Coaches my wife up, coaches my kids up, coaches my sister up. Happy Father's Day to all the fathers out there. And one thing, Matt, we had a 10-pound heavenly ham.
Honey-baked ham. Matt. Get it right.
Honey-baked ham. It was heavenly. Hey, it tasted heavenly to me, Matt. It was honey-baked, but it tasted heavenly.
Absolutely.
It was delicious. 10 pounds of it, Matt. I put away 5 yesterday.
Chad Gilbert. Chad, thanks for the chat, buddy.
Good talking to you. Thanks for all the run. Appreciate everything you do for Southern Indiana sports.
Thank you, sir. That wraps things up for this Monday program. Back with you Tuesday at 11 o'clock. This is the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.